Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nathan Ramsey, and I'm the Executive Director of Land and Sky Regional Council and Director of the Mountain Area Workforce Development Board. We want to welcome you to our weekly COVID-19 call. We've been having these calls since the end of March, early April, so it's hard to believe it's been that long, but you know, time flies when you're having fun. And I know, you know, we've been through a lot of struggles together as a region and state, as a nation, over the last 6 months. So we're excited today to have really some good presentations for you. First, we'll have the governor's office. Drew Christie with the governor's office is always kind to share with us. So we'll hear an update from Drew. And then this is Manufacturing Week, and tomorrow is Manufacturing Day. And so we're recognizing some manufacturers in our region who have responded to the COVID-19 health pandemic by pivoting production to produce PPP and PPE and other things to help our local area as well as our nation respond to this crisis. So just, you know, a reminder on Manufacturing Week and why we honor that and celebrate it. Our region's manufacturing economy has over a $2.5 billion annual economic impact. Just the direct wages paid by manufacturers is $1.4 billion a year, and that's just in the Land of Sky region. That's not including the area of isothermal region and the southwestern region to our west. There's over 20,000 manufacturing jobs in the region, and while manufacturing, we've lost some jobs due to this crisis we're currently in, manufacturing is actually held up better than many of our other sectors, and we have many manufacturers right now that are trying to hire and bring on additional talent, and so a lot of those are trying to add to their workforce. So you may have listened to a radio ad or saw a billboard of some of the many local manufacturers that are trying to recruit talent. So we try to celebrate this every year. Normally we have in-person events and have tours for our K-12 schools and other students of manufacturing facilities. This year, due to COVID-19, we were unable to do that. But if you go on the Mountain Area Workforce Development Board website and click on news, you'll see the some of the events that are happening this week throughout the region, organized by our economic developers, our public schools, other educational institutions, and our most importantly, our employers. So I hope you get a chance to take a look at that. Just housekeeping matters before we start. These calls are recorded. If you would like to ask a question, please enter that in the chat function. If you're unable to enter a chat on the computer, you can text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. So based on our security settings, everyone should be muted as you join the call. And just as a double precaution, please just place your device on mute during the call if possible. And so enter any questions through the chat function. So I'll now turn it over to Drew Christie. Drew is the Western representative for Governor Roy Cooper. And Drew has been very kind to share with us on these calls the latest updates from the governor's office. And I know the governor made many important announcements yesterday, Drew. So I'll turn it over to you, and you can give us an update on the latest news.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you to Land of Sky Regional Council for hosting this meeting. As my usual, I'll go over data first and then get into some of the meat and potatoes of what I'm going to cover today briefly. As of today, there have been 212,909 total confirmed positive cases. There have been just over 3 million tests completed. So that brings us to an average about 5.7% positive. So we're trending in the right directions. As Secretary Cohen said, you know, that magic number is about 4 to 5%. So we're hovering right there at it. But we, of course, want to see that number get to 1% or 0% is ideal. And so we're, you know, that's why we're emphasizing get behind the mask, you know, making sure that people are remembering the three W's: to wear your face coverings, to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds as many times as you can, and to wait at least 6 feet apart. Some other numbers here for the Department of or Division of Employment Securities. There have been a total of $8.1 billion paid out from March 15th through September 30th. There have been a total of 1.3 million claimants, and there have been 900,000 claimants paid. That's a percent of 69% have been approved for state benefits. There have been 29% that have not been eligible for benefits, and there are still 1% of folks, which is 15,000 people, still pending resolution for state benefits. So again, we're trending in the right directions there. We're getting monies paid out as we can for those that are that meet the requirements. So shifting topics here, yesterday Governor Cooper announced that beginning this Friday at 5 o'clock, we will be moving into phase three. And what phase three kind of states, none of the current businesses that are opened under phase 2.5, all of their occupancy percentages will stay exactly the same. What this affects, it allows large outdoor venues with seating greater than 10,000 may operate with 7% occupancy for spectators. Smaller outdoor entertainment venues like arenas or amphitheaters may operate outdoors at 30% of outdoor capacity or 100 guests, whichever is less. Movie theaters and conference centers may open indoor spaces to 30% capacity or 100 guests, whichever is less. Bars may operate outdoors at 30% capacity or 100 guests, whichever is less. Amusement parks may open at 30% occupancy, outdoor attractions only. The limits on mass gatherings will remain at 25 people indoors and 50 people outdoors. And lastly, the 11 p.m. curfew on alcohol sales for in-person consumption in locations such as restaurants and outdoor bars will remain in place through October 23rd. And October 23rd is the scheduled date for phase three to expire. So if you want to read in greater detail, please review the executive order and the FAQs for Executive Order 169. You can find those at governor.nc.gov. And the last thing I want to talk about, Governor Cooper has proclaimed that this week is Manufacturing Week. So as the state CEO, Governor Cooper leads the seventh largest manufacturing economy in the United States, with North Carolina's manufacturers contributing $100 billion to our GDP, to our state's GDP. Studies show that for every $1 spent in manufacturing, $1.82 is generated for North Carolina's economy. During manufacturing, North Carolina manufacturers, produce 17% of our gross state's product. During this week, we celebrate the contributions of manufacturers in our state, as well as manufacturing sector research initiatives and workforce development programs. In 2019, 95% of North Carolina's $32.8 billion of exports were manufactured goods spanning from pharmaceuticals, aircraft, and automotive, with more than 9,600 new jobs and investments totaling $3.58 billion. 69% of economic development projects announced in 2019 were manufacturing products. So from Governor Cooper and the governor's office, we want to thank all the folks in the manufacturing industry. Thank you for all your hard work and everything you do, providing jobs and producing products that are North Carolina made. So thank you. And with that, Nathan, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Drew. I appreciate that. And we appreciate the governor's support of our manufacturing sector. And thank you for sharing the latest news regarding phase three. Today, we're excited to have three manufacturers with us representing, maybe some different types of manufacturing, but all three of them really pivoted and responded to the COVID-19 crisis. And these companies are just a few of those in our region who have done that. And we want to salute all of our region's manufacturers. Before I get started, I want to give a shout out to the workforce boards adjoining our region, Region C Workforce Board, which covers McDowell, Cleveland, Rutherford, and Polk counties. The director is Steve Lockett, and the business services director is Linda Lamp. We appreciate their help on today's presentation, as well as the Southwestern Workforce Development Board. And the director there is David Garrett, and the business services representative lead is Linda Lamp. Also want to give a shout out to Barbara Darby, who's the business services representative lead, coordinates that for Mountain Area Workforce Development Board. So we'll go east to west, but we have three companies, Kitspo, Sylvan Sport, and Elevated Mountain Distilling. And so David Billstrom is with us with Kitspo. Kitspo is based in McDowell County in Old Fort. And so I'll turn it over to David to begin the presentation of how they've been able to really pivot and respond to this crisis. David, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate the work of you and your team at Kitspo.
Thank you, Nathan. How's my audio? Is this good?
It sounds good. It sounds good on my end, David.
Okay, great. So thank you so much for inviting us here to share a little bit about our journey. We too would give a shout out to the Regency Workforce Development. They've been working with us since the governor's office announced that we were moving to Old Fort, and also enjoying some economic development funding. So we've been on a crazy journey. Crazy, crazy, crazy. We made a decision in January of 2019 to move ahead to formally investigate a new home for Kitspo. The company was 7 years old at that point, not yet profitable, millions invested, built a great brand, but we were in an unsustainable business model. And by that, I mean, I left Western North Carolina after about 10 years and had gone out to California to help the company. And I quickly realized that the cash flow was all upside down. We would send millions of dollars to Asia, wait 6 to 9 months, get back the clothes that we thought we could sell a year earlier, and then attempt to sell them. And so for those of you who've been in that kind of business, you probably recognize the problem. I call it the double whammy. The first part is that you have to guess that, say, red shirts are going to sell 12 months before you have them. And then when you get your order of red and blue shirts, the red shirts don't sell for whatever reason. And the blue shirts do. So you lose money on the inventory on the red shirts, and the blue shirts that fly off the shelves, you can't get any more for another 9 months. So what I'm describing to you right now is the American apparel industry, from Walmart all the way to the high-end stores in New York. In fact, just about everybody on this call is not wearing clothes made in America. I know that because the statistics are clear and convincing, which is that the 98% of all the clothes purchased in America were made outside of America. 98%. So I can say with confidence, no more than 2% of you are wearing U.S. clothes. In fact, I'm not. My shirt was made in North Carolina because Brooks Brothers has had a plant making shirts here, but that's my only exception, and it's just a lucky guess. So back to our decision back in January, we looked around the United States. I knew from my time in Western North Carolina that the Appalachian region would be high on our list because we knew we'd have to invest in the workforce. If only 2% of all the clothes are made in America, that means we don't have people who know how to make clothes anymore, statistically speaking. So we knew we'd be training our new employees on how to sew, so we didn't want them to leave. So we wanted the stable, resilient workforce, and we targeted Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Southern Virginia. We ultimately settled on 10 locations, and we flew out to Charlotte and started our road trip to visit all those locations last June. Actually, Old Fort, McDowell County was on the list. We were headed for Morganton and Marion to look at sites, and we were shanghaied into Old Fort, where I had spent a lot of time over the years and never seriously considered because of the lack of tourism, the lack of activity downtown. And that's when we found out there was going to be a brewery. And in fact, there was space in the same building that would have the brewery, would have room for our factory. So we ultimately, as you can see by now, settled on Old Fort. That was announced on August 28th by the governor's office. And I literally drove across the country to be at the press conference, moving from California. And then we had about 6 weeks to hire the first 20 or so employees. So we ended up doing a ribbon cutting on December 13th in our new factory, which we stood up in less than 90 days with our 27 employees, 12 of whom had been trained to sew and were making our most popular product, a all USA Pendleton wool milled in Oregon and sewn in North Carolina by December 13th. So we were busy patting ourselves on the back and then getting to work in January and February to rebuild our inventory. And that's when we realized that COVID was real because we weren't getting any of our calls returned from Asia, where we still source some of our raw material like snaps and zippers. So we swung into action really in a matter of hours to start making PPE. And I tell people all the time that, you know, it looks like we were really smart and really brave, but we were mostly scared and wanted to do something to help. So we actually designed the first products before we priced them. And we underpriced them, of course. We did not put them on sale at our website. I got in touch with friends of mine that are first responders throughout Western North Carolina and also on the West Coast. And we were told to make as much as fast as we could, that there was no PPE, face shields, or masks available. So we started that process. We ordered raw materials for the shields because we don't normally work in plastic. We did that on Thursday. We started sewing from fabric we already owned, and we had miles of elastic for our clothes that require elastic. So we had elastic, and we started making the face masks on Friday. And I posted a picture on Facebook, on my own personal page on Facebook, Saturday morning, of our crew to come in on the weekend to make PPE. And in a remarkable turn of events, this. And I was just bragging on my folks. We weren't announcing it was available for anyone. And by Saturday night, less than 10 hours later, we had, I think it was 23,000 units ordered from a post on Facebook, which eventually itself went viral. So that's a lot of orders for 24 hours. By Tuesday afternoon, it was 45,000 units. I have never seen anything like that in my entire career. So it was obvious that was the thing to do. Tuesday night, we had a board meeting, and Wednesday morning, we changed our entire factory over to making PPE. We also started calling for help because we needed more people if we were going to make that much PPE. And two things happened as a result of this pivot. And one is that we got a lot of press. I attribute that Saturday Facebook post in part to a lack of leadership at the national level. People have probably lost track, but that was March 21st. And what happened that Saturday morning was we all woke up to the news that the House had not been able to reach agreement with the Senate on the first COVID relief bill. And I think I and many of the people I know were surprised that such an obvious problem hadn't been solved in late night sessions on Friday night. But it seemed like nobody had a message for Saturday. And there we were, and our only message was, we're here to help. I think that had a great deal to do with it, because it really was a slow news day, as the joke goes. So we were something to write about. And that national level of PR meant that sowers who wanted to help and either had no job or were afraid of losing their job contacted us. So I believe we were at 50 people within 10 days. So we went from 27 employees to 50 in 10 days. And many of those employees are still with us today because they are already know how to sew and very hard workers, and the kind of dedication and loyalty to getting the job done that we were looking for in the first place. A second thing happened, which is we became known throughout connections on the West Coast and the East Coast, as well as Western North Carolina, through that PR, and we got a lot of inquiries. So we ended up being in a sort of niche in the PPE world, which is if you needed to keep your medical clinic open throughout the COVID, early days of COVID when there were no tests, then you came to Kitsbo to get your PPE. So places like Mission Hospital never ran short on PPE. They have a global supply chain. They have guys that are responsible for making sure that they have all those supplies, and they had the supplies. But if you own if you're one of three owners of a OBGYN clinic in Manhattan, you don't have a supply chain manager. You can't get PPE except from us. So if you look at the Kitsbo website at the PPE and you see those pictures of medical professionals wearing our cloth masks, that's because those are the only masks they could get. Those are real medical professionals. In most cases, we've blurred their agency name to protect their identity, but they were wearing our cloth masks, the only thing they could get. Eventually, we'd get independent testing that would confirm that the HEPA filters inside the mask were almost the same as an N95 mask. Now, I can say that in this talk because we're all friends, and I'm not making any claims, and I'm not trying to get you to buy our product. The FDA prohibits us from saying that, so you won't find that on the website. But these are N95 quality masks that are comfortable to wear. They don't cost 10 cents, but they also didn't come from China. They came from Western North Carolina. So we charge $25 for those and $30 for the ones we designed with Wake Forest. So Wake Forest enters the picture because they also see that same national coverage, and they're looking for a development partner. They have an idea for a mask, but no way to manufacture it. So that occurred, I think, at week three. And it's a kind of fun part of the story where we keep meeting. Our driver drives east, and their driver drives west, and they meet in the, I believe it was the Walmart parking lot in Hickory, to exchange samples and materials so that we could stay in touch. And those meetups occurred daily for about 3 weeks until we finalized the design. Today, we're back to work. We continue to make PPE. It's a very strong business for us. I believe we'll be in the PPE business probably forever, but at least indefinitely for the next couple of years. We've restarted our apparel business. We've graduated, if you will, a number of the more talented sewers of the masks into the apparel. And we're making better apparel than ever. We're up to about 55 employees. We are very close to profitability. Those kind of financial results were the ones that we projected for the end of 2021. So in a very odd way, the pandemic was the best thing that could have happened to Kitsbo in its new home in Old Fort.
David, thank you for that fascinating history and the amazing work that you and your team are doing. We really are grateful for all the work of Kitspo, and I think, and we'll ask, maybe we have time at the end, there's been a lot of discussion whether this health pandemic will encourage onshoring of more manufacturing in the United States, and where we're not as dependent on foreign countries, because we saw in this crisis the dangers of that. So we appreciate you sharing with us. I'm going to turn it out. I guess we'll go east to west. So we heard from Kitspo in McDowell County. I'll turn it now over to Patrick Kennedy at Sylvansport in Transylvania County. Patrick and his team there, y'all all are probably familiar with pop-up campers that they make. And Tom Dempsey is, certainly one of the leaders, founders of that company, leaders in our region. I know today's call conflicts with the opening day of the Outdoor Economy Conference, and Sylvansport's been really engaged in that. But Patrick, I'll turn it over to you, and just like to hear the story from Sylvansport about how y'all have stepped up to respond to this crisis.
Well, sure, Nathan, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm happy to have the opportunity to share it. As you mentioned, Tom is unavailable and sends his regrets that that he can't share the story himself, but I'm pleased to be able to do so. So a little bit about Sylvansport, just as a start for anybody that is not familiar with us. We have been in Transylvania County essentially since our inception in 2004, and we our flagship product is our Go camper trailer, and we've manufactured them here since 2010. They've been very successful. We've worked with the county, and in the last few years moved into a larger facility. Over the past few years, we've introduced new designed products that we've brought to market in both the trailer and camping side, as well as sort of the camping gear side, things like sleeping bags and camp kitchens and things like that. At our heart, we're really a design company. Tom would tell you we're a design company, and we're only a manufacturer by necessity. And that is it's kind of encapsulates our history, I think, pretty well. We initially sought to have our products manufactured by other companies, but were really never to achieve the levels of quality in that we felt we wanted, and so we brought all the production in ourselves. So that's been a really good thing, and of course it's been a challenge for us as well, learning all that. But at our heart, like I say, we are a design company, and so the design of new products and bringing them to market is really at our core. And I think that's important only in how it relates to our decisions, similar to Dave at Kitspo, to when all of this started, to try to figure out how we could use those skills for the benefit of our community and for the country and ultimately for the world. We consider ourselves very fortunate. We make campers. We make a product that's intended to make people happy, to have fun, to get outdoors, to enjoy life. And at the same time, we're engineers and designers and problem solvers and makers. And so when this hit at the beginning of March, David said something that really resonated with me. He said we were scared, and honestly, we were scared too. We were scared for ourselves and for our employees, for our families, for our community. And the more we thought about it, the more we just thought, how can we do something to help? It just felt like you felt helpless to do nothing, I guess, is the way to put it. And with so many talented people here, we just asked ourselves that question. And so, again, somewhat similar. It's interesting to me, David, to listen to you, because so many parallels in your last 6 months and our last 6 months. We started working, all of our office staff started working from home. I think that Monday, the 17th or so of March, and we had a management team call that day. It was our first day at home, and made the decision in that meeting to move ahead with trying to manufacture and sell various forms of PPE. So face shields, acrylic counter guards, foot operated door openers. We are fortunate to have a pretty diverse supply chain because we do manufacture basically a vehicle. So as you can imagine, we have a lot of good relationships, mostly domestic, with suppliers of plastic components of all forms, with the fabrication and coating and plating of various forms of metal, with fabrics, that sort of thing, all sorts of plastics. So we were fairly fortunate in that we could draw upon that supply chain to try to source the things that we would need to put these items into production. again, also like David, it was a frantic week of trying to basically start a new company in our existing company. We didn't currently really carry any of the materials we needed, and so we had to go out and find them. I think I remember reading an article, David, that you might have, that was about, I think, a comment you made about how difficult it was to find elastic or one other component. Literally, there were thousands of companies trying to source these same materials in those few days. And we felt very fortunate that we were able to procure the materials we needed to start producing these things. I would say that our secondary motivation was really to try to protect our team. Again, I keep referring to David. You had a good speech, David. like you with your sewers, we have a pretty highly trained workforce that assembles our camper trailers. It's not the kind of work that you can just throw anybody into. And we have carefully kind of curated our entire team of people here over the years, and really would do anything to keep the team intact so that when the economy picked back up, we weren't starting from scratch again. And that proved to be very fortuitous because as I'll talk about in a few minutes, the outdoor industry rebounded sharply is not a strong enough word, but in the early summer. And so that was really our secondary motivation, was how do we keep our people employed? You know, how do we keep getting paychecks to them? And so we literally shifted all of our production folks, even people who had strong mechanical backgrounds and welding backgrounds, into the production of PPE. And that it was everything from face shields to counter guards to foot operated door openers. Essentially, we for the most part kind of shut down our trailer and camper business. We basically put everything on hold in terms of our suppliers. And again, we ceased production entirely in mid-March. I would say, I think naively, we probably thought that it would be a pretty easy thing to do. But between the sourcing of materials, the setting up of the new manufacturing space, the training and acquisition of new people to help us out, we did sell largely through our website as well as personal contacts at the beginning. So the redesign of a website to include all that, the shift in marketing, throughout the whole organization, you know, to go from producing campers and trailers to producing PPE in a week, essentially, required a huge shift for the whole organization, pretty much from top to bottom. And then our experience, again, I think somewhat similar to Kitsbo, is about mid-May, everybody who had pretty much been holed up in their homes for the prior 2 to 3 months wanted to go out to a national park and camp. We saw our core business just explode. I will say too, actually, one more point before I go there is, when we first started our PPE, the path, I guess, that our PPE has taken largely started also with first responders. You know, we with We did have a few larger organizations source limited amounts of PPE from us in the short term, but like David indicated, most of those hospitals and major medical providers have supply chains for PPE. So that lasted just for a brief amount of time. And then as the world started to open up a little bit, most of our business then came from either individuals off Amazon. We sell a lot on Amazon, or small businesses. Places that needed face shields and counter guards, maybe 50 face shields to last them a few weeks and 4 to 5 counter guards for each of their receptionists or whatever. And then most recently, over the past few months, we've seen a lot of demand from universities. And that's actually been a nice area for us to be involved, just in that it has a little later in the cycle has kept us with some big orders. So anyway, then in mid-May, we needed to shift back to our core production. And so we've basically hired folks for our PPE business. We've increased our total employment by about 50%, and we've shifted everybody back. We worked again very, very hard to sort of, if you can imagine, our core trailer product has about 400 components in it. And when you stop that flywheel of supplied parts, even though 95% of them are domestic, restarting that flywheel takes a tremendous amount of effort. And so on the heels of a tremendous amount of effort to start our new business, we restarted our old business. and just to give you an idea how busy that camping industry, outdoor industry and camping has been, in the past 4 months, June, July, August, and September, just ending yesterday, we have produced more trailers and sold more gear and achieved more revenue than we did in the entirety of last year, 2019. And that is not considering any PPE sales or anything. That's purely based on our core business. So it's been a remarkable roller coaster of a year. I don't know how else to explain it. And it has been great fun, but it has been stressful. Just a few thanks, I guess, to folks. We have been very fortunate also. The media has been very, very kind to us in helping to get the word out, both locally and nationally, but especially locally. We've had a lot of our supplier partners and even some new partners step up who really early on wanted to be able to do something, especially those that were service providers. We had several service providers call me and basically say, look, we want to do something, but we don't make stuff. So, we're happy to provide our services to you guys at a discount or, at cost. And really, how fortunate are we to work with people like that? Who just care about doing the right thing. And so we've been very, very blessed to have our local community, our local government, and other local companies, step up and help us do the work that we've been able to do. So, and that's pretty much our story.
Well, Patrick, just like Kitspo, that's a remarkable story. And we thought we knew Sylvan Sport, but what y'all have been able to do is really been remarkable. I'm assuming y'all didn't get much sleep in the last 6 months. It sounds like y'all have been going 24/7.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I'm going to try to take a vacation the week after next, and we'll see. We'll see if that happens or not.
Well, and it's a great story also about your core business. The camping industry is growing. You hear right now the RV sector is really strong. People want to get out and get into the natural outdoors, and it's great you've been able to add people to your team. So it's just another example of how manufacturing is growing in our region. So well, thank you again, Patrick, for sharing with us, and again, shout out to the Sylvan Sport team. Last but not least is David Angel. And following this call, we'll have a mixer in Maggie Valley at Elevated Mountain Distilling. So y'all all join us. David has offered that you can have a virtual glass, and we'll all toast to the work of David and his team. But David is the owner of Elevated Mountain Distilling in Maggie Valley. It's located in Haywood County. And he will share with us on how his company has pivoted to some extent. I think you maybe still be making some special beverages, but how y'all have responded to this crisis. So, David, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Just to tell you a little bit about who we are in normal times, we are Elevated Mountain Distilling Company. We're located in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. We are a manufacturer by day. We make spirits. A lot of times people get us confused with breweries, but we don't make beer. We make whiskey. We make vodka. We make flavored moonshine products. That's our job during the day. At night, we're also a music venue. We have a full bar. We have food trucks come in. So we sort of split our day between tourism and music, and as well as our core business of making spirits and selling our products here and at ABC stores throughout North Carolina. When COVID first came on the scene, you know, one of the first things that happened was restaurants and bars, like many places, were put on hold. We weren't sure what that was going to do to our core business. We knew our music scene was definitely on hold for us here. We weren't sure what was going to happen to the production of our whiskeys and spirits. At the same time, as different products, you know, from toilet paper to where we fit in with hand sanitizer, all these different products were getting huge demand, and there wasn't ability to meet the need. And for us, it was in the space of hand sanitizer. We knew we had the ability, we had the equipment, we had everything needed to make hand sanitizer. What we didn't have was the permission of the federal government to do it up front. There are two kinds of spirit permits that are distributed by the federal government. One is an industrial permit used for making ethanol to go in your car, for example. The other kind is a beverage permit. That's what we have. So we can make beverages. We can't make ethanol to go in your car. The federal government solved that by letting beverage permitted distilleries start to make hand sanitizer. A big part, it's not that different from what we normally do. It's a batch. We take our essentially it's vodka, ethanol, at 192 proof. We cut that down to 160 proof, which is 80% alcohol. There's some glycerin, some hydrogen peroxide, some water that's added. It's blended together so that it has an even consistency to it. But it is a World Health Organization recipe approved by the federal government for distilleries to do. So we shifted gears. We put a halt on all of our beverage manufacturing. Initially, we wanted to make sure, we knew this was a priority that needed to be met, and we wanted to meet it first and then get back to our core business second. There was a huge demand up front. Hospitals, schools, churches, individuals, we were getting requests from all kinds of places, more so than we could handle. We made a decision. We weren't sure if this was going to be something that would last 2 or 3 months and then big industry would be able to take back over, or if we were going to be in this more of a marathon and a longer haul. So rather than ramp up our own workforce to meet that need, we partnered with a brewery that's just down the street and had them, it gave their employees the ability to do work. It helped us out with this, but it allowed us to meet between Elevated Mountain Distilling Company and Bear Waters Brewing Company. We were able to meet the needs that were coming into us locally around West North Carolina. And we still get calls from other places. We people requesting hand sanitizer from other states that can't get it. But as a whole, we service Western North Carolina. Up front, that need was, as I mentioned, individuals. It was hospitals, big industries. Over time, that sort of shifted for us to being more the individuals for a period. The bigger organizations were starting to find other sources. Lately, our customer base has shifted again. We still have individuals that call us or come in and buy, you know, a gallon or a quart of hand sanitizer. But our big customers now are back in the industry. School systems, as different schools are taking off, and they use it in different ways. We have schools that have our hand sanitizer throughout the school. We have other schools that are getting a different sanitizer to go in the room, but they're using ours in spray bottles. So when the kids get on the buses, hold their hands out, the driver sprays their hands with hand sanitizer. They're allowed to get on the bus. So they're finding different ways to use it, but we have several school systems we supply weekly with hand sanitizer. Big customer for us is Harris Casino. They use it. Again, they have the spray bottles. When you sit down at a table, they're going to spray your hands to make sure they're sanitized. They use it to wash poker chips. So when you sit down and get poker chips, they've been sanitized since the last person used them. They have a whole process they develop, and they are a very good customer to us with that. So that's worked very well. The other thing I'd share too, outside of PPE type support, we started looking for what else can we do. We started moving back in. We now make all of our products, and we're back into our core business. We've got our products out again throughout the state. We've got a great customer base that was patient and supported us as soon as we got back to sort of help get that launched. But we also started looking for what other opportunities might there be. There's a nonprofit organization here in Western North Carolina called WNC Community. WNC Community is a agricultural-based nonprofit. Their main work, if you live in Western North Carolina, you know how much beer is manufactured here. They work with the major breweries, well, all the breweries for that matter, to take grain off their hands. So as they've finished making their spirit or their beer, WNC Communities partners those breweries up with different farmers that might need it, mainly dairy farmers that they can use as feed. It works good for the dairy farmer getting a discounted price on grain. It works good for the breweries because that's got to go somewhere, and it keeps it out of dumps. It reuses, it makes it a profit center, essentially. One of the things WNC Community identified especially in Asheville, it's such a beer hub, and there's two or three major brewers that are based in Asheville. When the pandemic happened and all the restaurants and bars across the East Coast froze, the big breweries really couldn't stop manufacturing. They still had the cans and the bottles and that they needed to do. They still had to make kegs of beer. So as soon as the restrictions in different states across the East Coast lifted, they were ready to get kegs of beer back into restaurants, back in the bars. Beer in a keg, once a brewer kegs it, they have 45-day window to sell that keg. Then they can no longer sell it. So as you can imagine, there's hundreds of thousands of gallons of beer sitting in Asheville, North Carolina that's in kegs that is perfectly fine, but it's beyond that expiration date that they can sell it. So we've partnered with one of those. We might end up partnering with another major brewer as we go into 2021. But we get about 2,000 gallons of beer given to us every week. We distill whiskey out of it. To make beer is alcohol fermented from grain. Whiskey is alcohol distilled out of grain. So essentially to make whiskey, you got to make a beer and then distill the alcohol out of it. And we're fortunate to have this new product line that's coming out. 2,000 gallons of beer a week. We've been doing this almost 2 months now. We went through right at 14,000 gallons of beer that is given to us to use. We've made around 40 barrels of finished whiskey. A whiskey barrel's 53 gallons to give you a sense of what we've made. It's a unique and different product that's really not out there. It's whiskey on your tongue when you swallow it. It has a beer IPA kind of feel to it. So it's a new product line that we look forward to launching later. And it all started because of the pandemic and the need to get rid of a new waste stream.
David, thank you for sharing with us. It's a really fascinating story. And most folks don't think of our breweries or distilleries as manufacturers, but largely when you think of production, packaging, logistics, a lot of the same manufacturing principles that would apply to other sectors. It's very much even with quality manufacturing process. So we really appreciate y'all sharing with us today. I don't know we had any questions in the chat. I don't know if y'all have any thoughts. You know, part of the reason our country was so dependent on those foreign sources was, you know, those were the lower cost options for various reasons, largely labor costs, but maybe other things as well. Do y'all see this pandemic as pivoting more production in the United States? I know, you know, Kitsbo's seen some of that, but, you know, will we go back to a world when, you know, we want something that's a couple of bucks cheaper, but, you know, it has to come, it's coming from a foreign source. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I won't speak for anybody else, but I'm fairly cynical about this. The N95 masks, I hear a commercial on my favorite podcast every morning that informs me that 3M is busy making 2 billion masks for PPE in the United States this year. And 3M is well documented as making all of those N95 masks under license in China. So the face shields, we have 60,000 face shields here in Old Fort. If anyone would like them, I'll ship them to your house for free, because we can't sell them to the state of North Carolina because they've already purchased more affordable face shields that are made somewhere else. So while we have robust sales with citizens, the schools, the universities, government agencies are under tremendous financial pressure because of COVID and what it's done to our economy. And as a in a deep irony, they're pretty much forced to buy from China, and China's happy to sell. So they're back in stock on everything. And so we're digging ourselves a hole for the next COVID coronavirus, in my opinion.
Well, and I think that's where maybe, you know, certainly policy, we recognize how vulnerable we were. There was a time where, it was literally there were articles in the Wall Street Journal talking about how these large, you know, hospitals were out sourcing, and it was pretty much like a Middle Eastern bazaar. Or, you know, I have a friend who has a friend who has a friend that can, you know, get something to you. So that was a scary thought. I don't know if anyone else wants to add to that. And then, you know, only other question, you know, y'all are in many cases pretty large businesses for our region. You know, federal government defines small businesses as businesses under 500 people. Did you see any of the business supports that came out through the CARES Act as helpful to your company? Or, you know, I know small business has really been under attack because of this pandemic. It's really hit small businesses harder. Do you have any thoughts on ways that our region could support our smaller manufacturers? And if you don't have any thoughts on it, that's fine too. But I think the national data shows that, you know, larger companies have been able to thrive a little more than smaller businesses. Small businesses have been hit really hard. And, you know, a lot of people think when we say manufacturing, those are large companies with thousands of employees. But just in our local area, we have over 500 manufacturers. And while we have some that have over 1,000 employees, most of our manufacturers are, you know, 30, 40, 50 people or so, in some cases less. So any thoughts there? Patrick, yeah, David?
I would just add into that, you know, one of the challenges I think most industry faces is it's still very unstable. You know, we all, if this whole year has felt like a roller coaster, with some weeks being wonderful and other weeks being a struggle. And I think as a small business, I think that's one of the biggest things like the CARES Act does, is it helps to level that out so that you can weather the storm a little bit more confidently.
Yeah, I would agree with that too, David. I think it's the uncertainty that makes it difficult to continue to invest or to try to project what your sales are going to look like. And And those aspects of the CARES Act, I think, help small businesses in particular to have the confidence to try to continue to do those things, especially if you're entrepreneurial, you know, and you're trying to do your thing. And I would add also, Nathan, to your prior question, you know, David kind of addressed it from an institutional standpoint, but I think it also begs the question from an individual standpoint, question we have to all ask ourselves, which is, you know, how much more are we willing to pay for items that are made domestically? Because that's really the reality of it. And we, you know, we like to have lots of cheap things. And that mindset will continue to drive manufacturing and sourcing offshore.
Absolutely. No, our core business of apparel, it's, you know, this is premier, premium priced apparel for people who want to spend time in the woods. So our cycling wear is normally worn by someone who's riding $8,000 mountain bike, and they didn't buy that at Walmart. And so we have room in a premium product line for, if you will, USA pricing. And it's the same thing with our masks. There are more expensive masks. We're right in the middle. They're very good masks. They are very comfortable, and you can wash them and reuse them over and over, and they still look sharp. So again, they're not inexpensive to make. So for premium products, we have an opportunity. And I think a lot of the Western North Carolina economy that's around tourism is also a premium product. We just had family friends go to the Biltmore, and you know the cost of going to the Biltmore for a day was shocking to me. And so that's another premium product. I don't see people checking how much their dinner in Asheville costs when they're tourists. They're purchasing a premium experience. But for everything else that's a commodity, wow, yeah, we really like it inexpensive.
I don't know if any of y'all had a chance as you grew. Were you hiring some people that had lost their job from other sectors? Were the people able to transition that might have been working somewhere else? Did you notice that in your company's experience?
Absolutely. I think everyone we hired had been furloughed from somewhere else.
I don't know if the other companies want to share at all. We'll try to end the call at 2:00. We try not to take up too much of your time. Patrick or David, any other thoughts there?
Yeah, we definitely hire people out of other industries. As I mentioned, our core business, we've continued to use our same folks that we had before, but we've hired people out of, you name it, hospitality, retail, kind of across the board. And those are people who, and just to clarify too, those are people who had lost their jobs in those areas. You know, they weren't just transitioning to us.
David, with Elevated Mountain Distilling, I'll give you the last word.
You know, we have maintained, one of the things we're proud of, we've maintained our workforce. We did not have to let anyone go during the process. And as I mentioned, we rather than hire people and then not need them in the long run, we just partnered with one of our neighbors to get the work done and help them keep their employees moving. So it's again, I think a lot for us was just thinking creative about how to get there.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, David, with Kitspo, Sylvan Sport, and Elevated Mountain Distilling. We appreciate y'all sharing your story today and taking time out of your day. I hope those on this call have found it informative. I certainly have, and it's really heartening to see the impact of manufacturing in Western North Carolina and how locally owned companies are stepping up to meet this healthcare and economic crisis. Again, I want to give a shout out to Steve Lockett, the director of the Region C Workforce Development Board, and Patty Thompson, their business services lead there. For helping organize this call. Also a shout out to Linda Lamp, the business services representative with Southwestern Workforce Development Board, and David Garrett, who's the director at Southwestern Workforce Development Board. for pulling this together. Also, a shout out to Barbara Darby, who leads business services with Mountain Area Workforce Development Board. You can go on the Land of Sky website at landofsky.org. We have a COVID-19 page. We try to have recordings of all these calls on that as a resource. So there are other resources that are available on that page. So we encourage you to reach out for that about small business resources for those that are looking for a job. We're maintaining a list of, you know, just examples of companies now hiring. You can certainly go to ncworks.gov, but many of our companies in the region who are hiring are manufacturers, and we're working diligently to help people transition to new careers if that's what they would like. But we encourage you to check out those resources. We'll have another call next week, Thursday at 1 p.m. The agenda hasn't been finalized, but we'll try to make it interesting for you. And we appreciate you sharing part of your day. And again, thank you, Kitsmo, Sylvan Sport, and Elevating Mountain Distilling for sharing with us, as well as the governor's office. So we'll go ahead and end the call, but y'all stay safe, have a wonderful day, and appreciate everything you do for Western North Carolina.